Welcome to What the Heck's your source for Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 episodes in a year, but only just barely. I'm your host, Davey, and with me, as always, I have my co-host, Phil. How are you doing tonight, Phil?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah, glad to hear it. We're 1 year in. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But to celebrate this 1 year in, we're bringing back our personal favorite and a fan favorite of the listeners. We got Jeff Osborne, our chief Canadian correspondent. How are you doing, Jeff?
Thank you very much. You know, I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys having me today for this momentous occasion.
Sure. Well, we've been chatting a ton over Messenger, just sharing thoughts on all the new stuff coming in. So as much as we've been talking to you, it felt like a good episode to bring you in on. As we always do, our context for this episode is that we are recording right after the release of Rippa's Snarlfangs, the gift set, and the accompanying releases. So that's got a ton to talk about. We are going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about we're taking the opportunity to talk about our 1 year as a Warhammer Underworlds podcast. You can get in touch with us at WTHcast or fire back at us on Facebook. And we'll talk about that more at the end of the episode. In the meantime, let's do some community shout-outs. I feel like we're overdue. I don't think we've mentioned it already, but we should give a big salute and shout-out to Michael Carlin, who took down the Grand Clash in the UK. And what I especially like about that is it's a nice success story. It has a cool arc. He put in a lot of time and effort with the game to get where he was, and I'm glad to see him rewarded. If you want to know more about that, you can check out Path to Glory, and they had an episode on that, and of course Michael's own blog, Steel City Underworlds, where he writes with his co-authors and talks about that. My other community shout out, I gotta apologize to Benny. I tried re-recording with him to close out his audio, and something about the new software we're using and his device were just incompatible, so that was not something I could salvage. He did us the tremendous courtesy of recording us with us not once but twice, and couldn't execute. So I apologize to Benny. I apologize to you folks who are looking forward to it. But we'll get him on again. We'll get something sorted out, and we'll chat with him because he's a great player, and he's got some good thoughts on the game. Either you guys got any community shout-outs you want to throw out?
Just generally, thanks to everybody who puts in the work to have the quick turnaround on all these previews for the blogs and YouTube channels and things. I'm sure that there's a short window between actually receiving those products and creating a well-put-together product for all of us to furiously go through and figure out what all these new cards are going to be. So, tip of the hat there.
Yeah. Jeff, anything you want to give a tip of the hat to?
Yeah, no, I'm just going to echo what you were saying, Michael Carlin's win. When you're following the blog and you see him kind of going to these tournaments over and over again and, relating, how close he got, what his thoughts were, and to finally see him pull out a really difficult win. I think even as fans of his blog, you just kind of cheer. As soon as we saw that he won, we were following along with it on Twitch. It was really exciting. We're all big fans of Michael.
Yeah, excellent. Well, before we jump into the main topic, we do a what the heck is going on with you, and Jeff, as our guest, you have the place of honor, and why don't you kick us off? What have you been up to lately in the Underworlds hobby?
Yeah, I've been pretty busy. I just got back from Warzone Atlanta, which is primarily a 40K tournament. But when I was there, the Crit Def guys threw a little Friday mini event down in Atlanta, and I made sure I went to that. It was great to meet the guys. They got some really cool swag. They got some shirts. They threw a little mini event that was a lot of fun. I think we had 10 or 12 or so. It was a Friday night, and it was only kind of 6 o'clock onwards. So I don't think they were expecting a lot of people, but they were just trying to drum up some community support. So I managed to play two of those guys, great chaps. Didn't pull down anything. Ironically, one of the friends who I brought out to it, who had only played a few games before, I brought him down a deck, and he ended up winning it. So it was just I brought down my Smashing Pumpkins Yathari Guardians Warband just because I just finished painting them and I really was playing them a lot. And then the irony that I bring him down a deck and he wins with my deck and I definitely didn't. So it was pretty funny.
What did you bring for him? What did he?
Profiteers, actually. So it was kind of a point and shoot, pardon the pun, type of warband. So he's a great player. I don't want to belittle his skill at all. He plays a lot of games. He plays 40K at a really high level. He understands action economy and really picks up on it quickly. So I'm not surprised he could win with a good deck, but it was just pretty funny to see him come out. He played more games that night than he had ever before. And so, and he took down some tough competition. Yeah, he took down, I think, maybe two or one of the Crit Def guys on the way. So it was, just amazing. So anyway, that was a great time down at Warzone Atlanta. And I really hope that the Crit Def guys, keep putting out podcasts because I love their stuff. And also next year, maybe make it bigger and bigger because the Warzone Atlanta tournament is really big. So I think it's a good platform to maybe have bigger events. So that was a lot of fun. And then last weekend, we had our local GW store event for the Season 3 Q1 box, which the cards in the new box, or the promo cards, are just amazing. I don't know if they've gone to a new printer, but the promo cards are fantastic. They're slightly embossed. Yeah. They're great. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And there's a lot of cards you're going to use a lot. Like, it's not like you're getting Great Cunning. You're getting super useful cards in there. So that's kind of exciting, too.
Yeah, Snares in there and a lot of other ones. And I also in that I managed to, with my Smashing Pumpkins conversions, I managed to take the Best Painted. So I got a Golden Demon Denial, which was great. So I'll probably retire them for a little while now and kind of pick up a new project.
So two things that spin off from that. One, the Golden Demon Denial is well earned. There's some super cool conversions, seasonally appropriate. And as well as I can, I'm going to try and include a link to the images in our show notes so people can check them out if they haven't already seen them on the Facebook groups. But it was cool. Phil and I got to see those. You sent us some pictures, work in progress, so it was cool to see them move along. And I've seen frequent pictures of them on in the deployments of games as you get ready to go. So that's been cool. And I think we're gonna sidebar it, but I think we're gonna talk Yulthari's Guardians, what role they may or may not play in the Beastgrave meta, such as it is. So we're gonna come back around to that. We have too many things to talk about today to add one more to the pile. But stay tuned for that. Phil, what have you been doing lately?
I've been experimenting a lot. It's a good time to just try different things, see what sticks, throw everything at the wall and come away with new crazy ideas. Most recently tried out another defensive Molog build that really threw a Fire Slayer player for a loop. I'm sorry, I can't remember your name right now. It's just fun to keep taking older warbands and keep putting them through different cycles and see, like, oh, can I, you know, do something different that I couldn't do previously now that everything's shifted so much? Because, you know, everyone's playing objectives now means that your own strategies may work differently than they used to. So currently looking at Molog and Magor a lot, but also have plans for Eyes and Curse Breakers and Reavers and of course the Rippers. Gotta try out those dogs.
Absolutely.
For myself, I've been continuing to try to refine my play with the Reavers. It's been a ton of fun. And then also as Jeff was trying to prepare for Warzone Atlanta, we were sharing the deck back and forth, and so I took Guardians out for a few spins and discovered I am not very practiced with them because I would do very silly things like get Ilthari killed very early in the game. So it was a good lesson in what it means to kind of get reps with a warband and get a feel for sort of overall strategy, like when do you start pushing into a risky spot and all that sort of thing. So that's been cool. And then a little experimentation on the side with Bar Striders as well. But all good stuff. Enjoying the game greatly. And each of the times I get out and get to toss some dice. So that's what's going on with us. Let's talk this episode. So we're gonna be covering, there has been a deluge of new releases. We have Rippas, so the Warband itself and the Universals accompanying. There's been the gift set. And then there's been 1 year of What the Hex. So that's what we're going to cover. And then at the end, we're going to talk. We got a little contest here to as a celebration for our 1 year. We'll throw it out to everybody, and we'll see how that goes. I think we're starting here with Rippa, so we're going to talk about that. Let's talk first impressions. So, Jeff, I know you and I have managed to play a handful of games, and based on those games and based on looking at cards and based on the previews that we've seen from the other content creators out there, what is your first impression of Rippa's Snarlfangs?
Yeah, I think they're a really cool mix. I kind of get, they all have ranged weapons, so I get a bit of a three-model Warband Farstriders feel, but I think they're also really aggressive, so they have a bit of a Magors feel. But also their inspiration mechanic is kind of like Molog-esque. You need to decide if you want to attack the leader to inspire everybody or just avoid him, similar to Molog. Do you even want to engage with him or just avoid him? So that's a really interesting design space. And in our games, going in with the, I think it might have been Minai.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it. Minai, going in with Minai and making a three range attack at one model and then having your wolf attack another model that's nearby. Like, it's just really interesting. So I'm excited to see where that warband goes. I tried to build a bit of a flex build, but I can see that you could build almost anything.
Yeah, I agree. I really like the sort of Molog comparison you come to, because I think you and I both sort of independently came to that analysis where it was, hey, there's one fighter I kind of don't want to attack because I don't want to inspire the other two. How long can I afford to not attack that fighter? The difference being, I think there comes a point sometimes with this warband where you're like, well, it's okay to attack him now, or I absolutely have to. Molog often feels like I'm either attacking him early or not at all, like you're committing that way. But for me, I found them, I think they're an incredibly difficult warband to assess, to analyze. It's hard to figure out what they want to do. I think they have all these built-in things that are pulling you in multiple different directions, you know? So Minai and Stabbit have range 3 and 2 attacks respectively, which don't necessarily synergize with the Wolf Jaws attack. It's nice to be able to have those. Like you said, you may be able to attack more than one target. And then even some of the cards, like we had this a couple times where you and I were playing, where it was difficult to figure out, did you want to be attacking from adjacent or farther away, or what was the good play? And so I think because they're so difficult to evaluate, they're going to be, I think they have a high skill curve and a low floor. Like, I think you can flounder with them, is my initial impression, and then do pretty poorly with them just because they are presenting you with so many difficult choices early on. And there's lots of potential to make a bad choice or a wrong choice. That said, because they have so many choices, I think there is a lot of options with how you build them out. You know, like you were talking about, do I go all in on Rippa? Do I make Rippa this beast that nobody wants to attack because they're worried about inspiring the other two, but you make him so powerful that he, you know, wrecks house? Or do I operate under the assumption that Rippa is going to start, he's going to be my opener, and then he goes down, and then I close it out with Stabbit and Minai. So I remember when it was first advertised by GW, they said a warband like you've never seen before, and I think that's true as far as the rules go. Like I think it's a space that's not occupied by anything else, and that's extremely, extremely interesting. I really like thinking about them, and I on the initial impressions, I don't know where to place them. So that's my take on them. Phil, how about you?
Yeah, they're a head scratcher. I think they're going to be one that we don't quite know where they land until we see them in action. I think there's going to be a lot of different play styles, and it eventually will probably land on sort of the best or optimal choice. But I think having those multiple avenues actually gives some dark horse options where your opponent doesn't know what you're putting on the table necessarily. And that can have a strength in and of itself.
Sure.
So I like that flexibility. I think it's interesting that the two Goblin Warbands that we have are both kind of head scratchers, and like at face value, you don't really know what to do with these. I wonder if that was intentional or not. I'd like to think that it was, because goblins are kind of crazy, but you know, I don't. If only we could, you know, have a window into the mind of the designers. But that all being said, and I agree with everything you guys have said, but I do feel like one thing that I see as sort of a weakness to the Warband right away is that their base stats don't seem super strong. And so I think they're going to be fairly upgrade reliant to be able to become a little more reliable. Two dice across the board for the goblins attacks, and some of those being on two fury is scary to think about. If you want to talk about having to rely on dice, that's some scary territory right there.
Sure.
And so I feel like there's also going to be a pacing that's necessary to play these guys well. I think if you're too aggressive too early, you could whiff your attacks and just put yourself in a bad spot. I think there's going to have to be this sort of balance of figuring out when do you go in, when do you stay back. And I'm hoping that their speed, because I think that's a really big strength to have everyone in a small warband count or a small model count warband, for them to all be so fast does seem like a high strength compared to some of the other low count warbands that we have.
Sure, that makes sense. I think you're on to something there, where like which way you go with the upgrades will, you know, like I was saying, will kind of dictate a lot about where you can go with them. I mean talking about this idea of like them being difficult to evaluate, what you see that Wolfjaw attack as, you know, so it represents a potential, like Ripa can theoretically one shot a 4-wound fighter in a single activation, even uninspired, right? But it's statistically unlikely, you know, because he has to land his main attack and land his wolf attack. That said, you could also see that as insurance. So while he has a long shot at killing a 4-wound fighter, he's fairly likely to kill a 2-wound fighter, because especially once he's upgraded, you can go in, and if you miss the first one, well, you've got a little backup with the wolf attack.
And to that point, I think the interesting part too is the wording on the wolf attack, which is after your activation, because in our games, I loaded up the deck with a bunch of kind of attack on your turn. Yep. And I didn't realize until afterwards that like Furious Reprisal, which is a reaction to attack after I'm attacked, I can't do my wolf attack afterwards. I can only do my main attack. And same with like Aggressive Defense, or that card that if you're the new card where I think it's Jealous Defender, where if you're standing on objective, you can make an attack. Yep. You're not able to react with that second the wolf teeth. So where you do get efficiency on your own turn, you kind of all of a sudden lose that if you start attacking out of sequence.
Sure. And I think this theme of like it them being difficult to evaluate, it carries on not just from their fighter cards, but into their faction cards. Like you were talking about that specific card, Furious Reprisal. So it's a reaction after an attack. If you were targeted, so it doesn't matter if you were hit or missed or whatever, as long as you're alive, you get to make an attack back. But it doesn't prevent drive back. So it is this weird thing, because it's after, it can stop things like pit trap or other after an attack things that are quite powerful. However, like you could be pushed back out of range for some of your more powerful attacks. So how powerful is that card? I was talking with Randall from the Battle for Salvation podcast, and he said this card is trash, and I was like, no, I think it's actually pretty good. And I think that's a mark of a very interesting warband where two people who play a lot can come to two very different conclusions on the strength of a card or a fighter or what have you. And that makes them a real intriguing warband right away.
Yeah, for sure. And to that point, I mean, like, it comes back to they're so hard to evaluate. Like, how can you even make an evaluation of what a strong card is in this warband if you don't know what this warband is doing? So I think, like I said before, I think we're almost just going to have to wait and see. People are just going to have to sort of stake their claims to say, I think this is how they're supposed to be played, and go try it. And somebody else is going to say, I think this is how they should be played, and go try it. And then the results will have to speak for themselves, because I think on paper, there's no one, you know, ultimate solution.
Sure. I think, Phil, to your point of them being this thing where you can deploy them and you're not sure what they're going to do, I'm gonna throw this out there. I think they may be the Beast Grave Eyes of the Nine. I think they are the warband that there's going to be somebody who brings them and takes them deep into major tournaments, makes a deep run with them, like in almost every tournament, because it seems like that way with Eyes of the Nine, right? Like there's always mm-hmm. somebody who makes the cut with them. There's always somebody who goes deep with them, and everyone's like, what's going on? Eyes of the Nine? Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I think Rippas might be that warband for Beast Grave.
It would certainly be cool. I think their low model count maybe makes them a little less confusing than Eyes, but that may not even hold to be true. So
yeah.
I don't know. I like crazy weird warbands like that, so I'm actually super excited about these guys.
Yeah. I mean, and that is the thing. Like, they are, for a three fighter warband, you only have 4 wounds pops, so you have 12 total wounds across the warband. Unlike the other three fighter warbands, they go from 1 shield to 2 dodge instead of from 1 shield to 2 shields. So mm-hmm. they have less defense. Where they make up for it is with their speed. So you can try to keep them out of trouble with that. Not only speed, but 2 of the fighters have an attack that is greater than range 1. So
yeah,
their threat range is substantially improved.
And also, when I see double dodge, I immediately think about guard. And I think they have a lot of cards where you're able to put them on guard. They've got cards where if you attack them while they're on guard and they survive or something along those lines, they score glory. So I think there's, as you mentioned, they've got like an Eyes of the Nine feel where if somebody plays these guys enough, I think the ceiling is there high enough that if you have enough reps and you have the patience and you know what the other warbands are trying to do more than they know what you're trying to do,
yeah,
I think you can be dangerous.
Yeah, this is an excellent point. Like, they benefited greatly from guard. And guard, you know, if you're not getting driven back into lethals, if you're not getting driven back into a snare or a pit trap, like that's a dramatic increase in survivability. So that's a really great point. I'm glad you brought it up. We had just a handful of questions about Rippas. Aman, who you may have heard of, Path to Glory, Hexes and Warbands. He wants to know what you think about the card Narrow Escape, and I'm going to toss this one to Jeff first. Narrow Escape is a gambit. It's a ploy. It's a reaction where you can reduce the damage. Anytime somebody takes damage, you can reduce that damage by 1 to a minimum of 1. So think of it as a ploy version of Potion of Constitution, and you're not too far wrong. Jeff, what's your take on this card?
I think anytime you can catch somebody by surprise, like the reason that Quick Thinker was such a dangerous card was that, or Rebound, or some of these cards that can catch somebody off guard, is that they've already done the math in their head about what it's going to take to get rid of you. And they're assuming if they roll the right dice that they've got you. And then as soon as you pull out that card and say, I know you thought you're doing 4 damage, but you're only doing 3, that can be a big game changer, where somebody's now left strung out in a position that might be, to your benefit than theirs. So I think the card's great. There's some, you and I, we were all discussing earlier about, does this protect against snare or pit trap, just because it's a reaction that happens at the end of the attack? That part, I'm sure, you know, hopefully there'll be an FAQ maybe about it, but I think it's a great card. I'm really excited about it.
Sure. I agree. I mean, I think you can reference back to one of our early episodes where we did one entirely about reactions, The power of reaction is that you can choose when to use this only when I need it, right? Think of it like you're willing to spend a power card on Great Fortitude often, which is plus one wound. This is effectively plus one wound, except it's plus one wound only when you need it. And I 100% echo what you said. You're able to get somebody to commit, and then they are overextended in a bad spot. They've, like you said, they've done the math, but they've done it wrong because they haven't expected this. The flip of that is, once they know it's out there, they're doing that math every time until you've played it. You're stuck. You're stuck being like, okay, I guess I'm going to try and make every attack with one extra damage than I need just in case. And that's powerful in its own right. Phil, you got any more thoughts about this one?
Just that it has the same benefit as Potion of Constitution in that when you play things like Great Fortitude or Sudden Growth, you're opening yourself up to Glory Seeker and having your opponent get more damage because you have more wounds. This effectively gives you the same wounds, but doesn't actually give you the wounds on your fighter, so then it doesn't trigger Glory Seeker. So it sort of is that sneaky way of also guaranteeing that your opponent's hits don't get stronger as your fighter gets tougher. And I think with the limited number of plus damage cards that we have right now that affect ranged attacks, I think you still see Glory Seeker a decent amount.
Mm-hmm.
And so having this way to sort of get around that is fun. And I think because of the other reasons that we talked about, that with it being a reaction instead of an upgrade, it actually is just that one step better than Potion of Constitution, which people were already running for those same reasons. So I think it's good. It is, I guess I would say that ploys and they tend to be the tougher spot to fill in the deck. You're usually, you know, jockeying for position a little bit more there than in the upgrades, just because upgrades tend not to be as strong. So there is the potential for this card to not make the cut all the time, but I think it's strong enough that people will definitely consider it when they're playing the Wolves.
I think so. I mean, I think anything that you can get one of your three fighters to live for one extra activation or longer is a big deal. So it combos with the counterattack card, the Furious Reprisal or whatever it's called, because you can make yourself live and all of a sudden you're attacking back. That's a pretty juicy combo. We kind of laid in as much into those and to rip a Snarlfangs as we can with what we know about them. Has anybody got any other thoughts they want to share on there, or are we ready to move on to the gift set where we had a lot more questions?
Let's move on. We got a lot to chew through here.
We do. So I appreciate everybody's we put out the call for questions a little more than 24 hours ago, and we got a deluge, and we're going to work our way through them best we can. Kelly on Facebook, he had a couple questions about what cards would you have liked to see come back but didn't come back? And Jeff, we'll throw it to you first.
Yeah, I think from a ploys perspective, I'll be greedy on this answer. I'll give a few. I think in terms of ploys, I would have loved to have seen Healing Potion come back. I think with the lethality of the game coming down and a lot of warbands are doing more chip-type damage, Healing Potion is a really strong card that really didn't see a lot of play in Season 2 when it was very much a one-shot meta, and maybe even Season 1. So I think that would be a fun but not overpowered card. I think there's a lot of warbands that are trying to be survivable, and they just don't have a lot of ways to do that without just stacking wounds over and over again. So that would be from a ploy perspective. From an objectives point of view, with all the feature token flip mechanics, I think those are really great, but I don't know who's going to run them if there's not a benefit to you directly. So I think cards like Overextended from Season 1, which was 5 glory for holding all objectives, and maybe Claim the City, which would be the skeleton version of it, and Making a Statement. Yeah, Claim the City, great podcast. Making a Statement was 3 glory, I think, and that's for holding them all on the opponent's side. If you could build a warband that was all about going in and just destroying objectives and then just standing on the one or two that are left over for like 5-8 glory, I think that would be an incentive to use token flip mechanics. Because otherwise, I think right now, the way they have it, you're only going to run them if you think you're going to run into a lot of ghosts or ghouls, but you wouldn't want to be running those if you ran into Moloch. So I think those two cards would have been great to see come back because it really fits the Beast Grave mechanics that we've seen so far.
Yeah, great point. Phil, what would you have liked to see but that you did not see?
I mean, there's lots of things that would be great, but... overall, I'll just say that, like, I was even surprised to see anything come back, and there's a part of me that wishes that nothing came back just because of how much it shook up deck building and how much it changed the game overnight. Yeah. And I really loved that.
Yeah,
so,
I hear you.
True.
So I will preface my answer with that, and then I will say one card that I really loved from Season 1 was Improvisation. And I think that one would be a fun one to see come back. It's not super strong. I don't think it would be used everywhere, but when it makes sense to use it, it's a great card. And I mean, we did get a card that's very similar. The name is escaping me right now.
Frenzied Search.
Yeah,
that is the one. And so like I like the mechanic for being able to draw more cards. I think it opens up some new avenues in deck building, and we actually lost almost all of our draw cards.
Yeah.
With the switch. So seeing one more comeback, I think would have been nice.
Yeah. And to your point, I think, Frenzied Search feels like, cause you have to sit on an objective to have it. It is easier to trigger early in the round because if you trigger early in the round, you only got to give up one. As opposed to improv, which you had to discard everything, and so it was more likely mm-hmm. to play it later in the round. Improv felt like the one that benefited aggro more, as opposed to Frenzied Search, which feels like the objective one. So it'd be nice to have the duality. I think that's a great pick, and I hadn't thought of it at all. But once you mentioned it, I was like, I like that one. For me, the light-footed or its equivalents that existed there, I thought that was a really cool tech card. It occupies that after an attack action, but on the defensive side, so it can block out a lot of things. It can block out Pit Trap or what have you. It can block Snare because you don't get pushed. You push yourself. You don't get driven back. You push yourself. I thought that was one of those cards that occupies that sort of middle ground of it's not an auto take, but it's an interesting tech piece. And I think if they continue to do this gift set, I think that's what I want to see is that sort of card that nobody wants to see Ready for Action coming back.
No, absolutely no.
But the cards that are in that middle ground of like, yeah, like maybe it fits in my deck. Or maybe this deck it doesn't work in, like that middle ground card is what's the most interesting to return to the game. So
definitely.
Let's see. Kelly had one more question. It said, would you like to see more faction specific cards added, especially for Season 1 warbands? And which warbands do you think would most need that? Phil, we're going to throw it to you first.
So we had another question similar to this, which we'll get to in a bit. But as a rule, I like faction-specific cards. I think it provides variability in decks, and I like that. I think in some ways it adds flavor. They play more to their, you know, how they're supposed to be. Like orcs are all about getting in and bashing everybody on the head. And it's like, well, if they don't play that way on the board, it feels wrong. But I think because we know that faction specific cards don't rotate, it has to be so careful, because if you get anything that's very out of balance, all of a sudden it becomes an auto include. And you know, you don't want it to become a situation of, you know, forced unbalance. So with that being said, I would like it to see the cards go most towards warbands that currently are having the hardest time in the new meta. I feel like orcs are not doing particularly well, although some people have won glass with them recently. So like, I don't think that anything's too far out of balance. And maybe like Farstriders could use a little bit of help because they've been struggling lately. But one warband that, and I would need to go and double check that I was actually correct on this, but just from what I'm remembering and my gut feel of looking at faction specific cards, I felt like Molag really didn't get any super great faction specific cards. There was like a small selection where you're like, yep, these are great. And then everything else.
Foul Temper was great. But he had like, so I think you'd probably count on one hand the number of cards that you might consider including.
Yeah.
And then so many that are so bad. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, get 4 kills in a round or something. And it's like, what?
I mean, I was just looking at them today. Like, there's one that's like, have every fighter in your warband adjacent to an enemy fighter. You're like, what? Like, how am I going to get, you know, Stalax or Spite Shroom? Like, what? Well, when is that going to happen? Yeah. So, to your point, I think there's a lot of room for that, for sure. My take, I think there's still plenty of room to be explored for some of these older warbands. I've always thought it'd be cool to let Eyes have a Gambit card that let you summon the Blue Horror, for instance. That'd be pretty cool. I think that would see some play, especially with some deck archetypes. Yes. I think it's unlikely that we'll see that. So I don't know that I want to. Jeff, you got any thoughts on this?
I think I'm just because of the logistics of it, I think I'm pretty comfortable with where things are at right now. Already there's the leaders deck that has faction specific cards in it that I'm not even too sure how you get those anymore. And so I'm thinking if that's an issue just for some of the season one warbands, later on, are they going to keep, if they have leaders 2.0 in this round that has, you know, past ones, and then they wrote part of that rotates. It just, I'm really not too sure how they could control it going forward. So logistically, I think I'm okay. I feel like they could probably do more harm than good if they were to try to get in there. So I still love my Skaven. I still think I can compete with them. The orcs maybe are a few steps behind, but some of those cards, some of their faction cards are strong.
Sure.
And if there was a few more cards maybe that are universals to help them leverage those, you know, seeing the wings come back. No, sorry. What was the Spectral Wings?
Yep.
Seeing Spectral Wings comes back is a help for aggro warbands. Does it help others more than them? Yes, but it still helps them. So I think I'm comfortable with where season one is right now. I don't have a crystal ball. So I
feel like we're touching on a question that we see a little later with Derek. He's asking us what our suggestion to bring season one warbands to a competitive level. Should we add models? Should we change stats? Better in faction cards, or just burn the plastic and move on? We've already kind of touched on this, right? Like, I think Jeff, you just said it best. I think anytime there's a new release of universals, it's time to go back and scan the old warbands. So I would say of the season one warbands, I think, I've been having a great success with Reavers. I think the speed and all-out aggro that they bring has them in a spot that people aren't playing against very much. Morgores, especially now that Spectral Wings is out, like they've got a spot where people are not, you know, back last year, people were thinking, okay, how do I counter like full-out aggro? But now people are thinking, how do I counter full-out objective play? And you can kind of sneak in under the radar there and get some work done. So I don't know that there's anything new that needs to be done. I think they're always going to be present. They're always going to be in the background. When cards like Ready for Action rotate out, then cards like Having a Good Time or a free attack on a 50-50, the value of that card goes up substantially, because it's so hard to get those free attacks. So, I don't think there's anything special that needs to happen for a season one warband. I think you just got to keep your eye on it and see if you can get that Dark Horse Warband up in there. Phil, what's your thought?
Same. My reaction is basically, let's not hold on too strongly to the end of season two, thinking that, oh, season one is, you know, left so far behind. I think we need to throw all those assumptions out and just try stuff again. I've been having tons of success with season one Warbands recently. And I know, you know, playing against other people using season one Warbands, they've also been doing very well. And maybe some of the cards they have are not at the same level, just because of, you know, where the design space was when they were written. But that being said, like, Fire Slayers have some of the best cards in the game, like, just outright. They are super good. And of course, that is to balance some of the weaknesses of the Fire Slayers. But I think they fill a really interesting spot in the game right now. And honestly, I would not necessarily want to see them come up in a tournament because I probably didn't prepare for it. Or at least not to the same level as something like Grimwatch. So, generally, I don't see season one as being underpowered too much. Yes, there's a few warbands that are underpowered, but that's no different than season two. I think you had your tiers in season two as well, and I think that's just going to be the nature of any game. And instead of thinking there's something that needs to be fixed, it's sort of like, well, how, if you really love that warband, then just play them anyway and make them work. And if you feel like they're completely just so bad that they're unplayable, I would argue that that's basically impossible because the numbers show that people win with any warband.
Sure.
People have won glass with every single one of them. So they're all not that far apart.
That's fair. With respect to the gift set, there's one question that has lit the internet on fire, and we're gonna take our little stab at it now. Mike on Twitter and Anthony on Facebook, they want to know, is Rebound actually a big deal? Jeff, I'm gonna let you take. I'm gonna let you draw the fire of the. we'll cover you, but you go in on this one.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I don't think it's personally such a big deal. I'm kind of the opinion that a card that was never played when it was printed in season one for over a year. I have a hard time believing that that's just because Molag came out and the card started going in all the decks. To be anti-Molag, and I was definitely part of the collateral damage there. No matter what army I played, I wasn't Molag, but I was taking the hate that people were putting in their decks for me. So I definitely feel the pain there, but I think Molag really isn't, I don't want to say the problem, but Molag is not the one to beat right now.
He's not the boogeyman anymore.
No, he's not. He's not. Well, and he can be dangerous. Of course he can. But he is seven wounds, soon to be 8, 9, 10 as he starts to stack on plus one wounds, of course, and he gets scarier. But right now, if you were to run that deck or run that card Rebound in against ghouls or ghosts that just ignore you, or warbands that just do
or
chip
snarl
damage.
Fangs. Like if there's ever a warband that kind of doesn't care about Rebound, it's Snarlfangs who are stacking multiple small hits to do their work, right?
Yeah. So I think the card is strong. Does it feel bad? Yes. But at the same time, when I get distracted off of an objective and I have supremacy in my hand, that also feels bad. So it's a card game that has cards that elicit responses emotionally. And yes, Rebound's one of them. Statistically, I think it's not a good card at 33% chance. The ploys is the biggest card slot that you can have. It's what kind of wins you games. So Rebound at 33%, even 50% chance, you know, that's even sometimes people don't take that. So anyway, so for me, in my opinion, it's not right now an issue. Last season, I definitely had a different answer. But right now, I think it's okay. If it's back, I don't see a lot of people running it right now.
And I can say, we'll take, for example, the games you and I just recently played. The most recent one, the last of our three games, where I was playing Mike Carlin's Grimwatch. Thank you, Mike. I think in the last two rounds out of the eight activations I took, I might have made one attack, you know. And so in that scenario, rebound is basically a dead card. And I know that not every game is going to look like that. But I think it's important to think about rebound in the context of this meta as opposed to the meta where it was the big scary thing. Phil, I'm going to throw it your way. Although I think on this podcast, your feelings on rebound are well documented.
Yeah. I mean, it's 33% chance. Like, I'm always going to play the numbers, and I'm not going to say that it's never going to be a problem. In that, like, there are going to be people who feel cheated by this card, because it can have that big of an effect on a game, but in the grand scheme of things, that's so unlikely that, like, somebody rolling triple crits and taking you out, you know, has an even lower, you know, chance of happening. And it happens, you know, all the time, and people are gonna just, you know, they'll move on because they're like, yep, it's a dice game. Dice happen. I just have to accept that sometimes my opponent's going to get lucky. This card's sort of the same way. Like, should it have come back? No. It's bad enough for how, you know, it affects people's psyche, and that there's such a visceral response to losing that way, that it probably shouldn't have been brought back just because it disrupts, you know, happiness with the game. Like, but in terms of, like, how much of an effect is it going to really have on a meta, I don't think it's really that destructive. I think it's more a question of, was this card good for game health? And I think it's not. And there are certain things that shouldn't be in games because you want players to enjoy playing the game. And so I was bewildered when I saw this card come back, just because it already was this sort of bemoaned and hated card where people were like, oh yeah, I lost my game because, you know, somebody rebounded my 4 damage attack and killed my fighter, and that was it. So hopefully Games Workshop's listening for future packs to say, like, hey, maybe we shouldn't, you know, do something like this again.
Let divisive cards lie. Like, yeah. And whether or not it actually was the terrible thing that people claim it to be, it was certainly divisive, and it maybe didn't need to come back for that reason.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's see. We're going to talk in a second about objective play, because that kind of rolls into both the universals that came out with Rippas and the cards that dropped with the gift set. But before we do that, we got the John from Facebook wanted to know, and this is kind of along the same things, what are your views on Games Workshop re-releasing Season 1 cards? Do you think this is a precedent for them releasing other cards this way in the future? And he says, looking at you for Ready for Action. And I will jump in and say, despite what we just talked about with Rebound, I feel like we're not going to see Ready for Action again. Like, none of the cards that came out were cards that were on the restricted list from Season 1. So if they thought it was good enough to be restricted, it's not going to come back. They're trying to bring back the cards that are on that slightly lower tier, and bring that. Or am I wrong? Is there something that was restricted?
I think, wasn't Cover Ground restricted?
I'm going to challenge you and say I don't think so. Change of Tactics was, but nothing on that list did I recognize. And I'm more than happy to be corrected by anyone that finds that to be the case. But I think by and large, of the 32 cards they picked, it looks like they picked things that were, generally speaking, tech cards. So keys, so yep. The TAC 1, 2, TAC 3, 4, and things like that. So I like the idea that we could see cards again. I don't know why you need to do that. You could always just reprint an equivalent in the season that exists. So I don't know how that looks going forward. But anybody got any other thoughts on that? Jeff, we'll throw it to you.
Yeah, my thoughts are twofold. One, I really hope that this isn't the format that they release new cards with going forward. As we were talking about earlier, the leaders deck is just something that's really hard to find now. There's cards in that are technically still valid. If this set of cards, this gift pack, is supposed to now keep around for, I guess, 2 years, because we've got this season and next season, it might be something that becomes hard to find. I'd rather it if they were to keep cards for the game locked within the pieces for the warbands. This one seems really odd to me. So I kind of hope that this isn't the format, although I do like them re-releasing season one. So twofold answer. I think a lot of the cards that they released were staples that I think should have probably been included in the base box, like Victorious Duel, the Tactical Supremacies, Geniuses. Like if they released objectives 1 through 5, like I don't know how they didn't release these ones in that sure. opening box. So... those are my thoughts, at least. A lot of these are really great cards, and I echo, Davey, your point that I don't believe any of these were on the restricted list. With the there was a key that was, but it wasn't a season one key.
Yeah, that's the slumbering key.
Yeah, slumbering key was, but that was the only one.
So we had actually a number of questions about this sort of combined release with the gift set and with Ripa's Universals, how we feel about objective play. And this is like the question of the hour, because at the end of season two, a lot of people were looking at objectives as this is just a place where I can move if I have Vein by Crystal, right? And they are definitely more than that now. So the question is, where does objective play stand? And we've got quite a set of questions referring to that. I'm going to jump to Jason Murray's question, and because we already briefly touched on this, Jeff actually almost answered this already. Can the flip remove objectives playstyle work? So that is, if you are deleting them or flipping them. Jeff, you kind of already talked about this, like the motivations for that. Like right now, the prime motivation for this exists as an anti, like in order to shut down Thorns or Gits or Grimwatch, these warbands that excel at holding lots of objectives. But that might not be enough. So what is your take? Like how close are we to that being a reason you take it just because it's powerful for yourself?
We might see it. I think a lot of armies are running something prize, the card that that you move to 2 hexes for an objective. So we're already seeing some counterplay there. But I think that there is definitely a room in Nightfall. And if we could see some more scoring cards that are related to flipping, that like score immediate type things, I think we'd see those type of cards getting used more to counter hold objective war bands, but then they're not wasted when you go against aggro. And I think that's the key, is you see a war band like Ghouls who almost effortlessly work through their whole objectives deck, almost as if they don't even care that you're there. And if you're going to have cards that that benefit from you flipping objectives against them, that those cards definitely need to also flow seamlessly when you're playing against non-hold objective warbands. They can't be wasted cards. So that's my thoughts on it, that there definitely could be a playstyle there, but I don't see it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think to that point, like there were some in the previous season, the analog for us might be Magic. There were some very powerful, a handful of very powerful anti-magic cards, like Scroll of Unbinding. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah,
Silence was one as well.
Scroll of Warding. Is that anyway? Warding Scroll, something like that. It just immediately canceled a spell. The thing was, it was a dead card in the number of draws. It was a pure counterplay selection, and so it didn't see a lot of play. What you need is something that benefits you for taking that card, even if what you're playing against is not into it. So if you have something that is saying, hey, congratulations, basically Scorcher equivalents, like if that builds out more, then maybe we see a reason to really lean into that right style of play.
I guess the only other thing that I could maybe see with trying to rely on flipping objectives is that it starts to fill the board with a lot more lethal hexes. So I guess if you're trying to build around lethal hexes and things that rely on lethal hexes, that could be another way to make sure there's lethals around. But that feels like it's not going to work just because we already have so many ways of mitigating lethals, and there's warbands that just outright ignore lethals. So I don't know that putting lethals on the board to that extent is actually going to really help you that much in the long run.
Sure.
That's a good point about the lethals, yeah.
To that effect, though, like the warbands to keep an eye on as far as the ones that flip or remove objectives, I think Eldari's Guardians, which have the in-faction to destroy an objective, any of the Ghost warbands, which are happy to have more lethals out there, Wild Hunt, which are happy to push somebody into a lethal, and also have an equivalent of the Eldari's Guardians, Reclaim the Lamentary. What's that Wild Hunt one called?
Purifying Rites, I think.
Sure. So those are all objectives that get them a little bit of the way, and I think a little bit more might get them the rest of the way. So
yeah, like right now, skeletons are just smiling with Claim the City. They're saying, yeah, you know what, I'm cool with flipping objectives. I'll go over there and push or move into all of them. I think there's an upgrade now that if you push or move into an upgrade into an objective, it flips. There's probably play there. It's exciting. We're really early in the season. Like, we don't know what's coming. Magic, I used to think, was nothing, and now it's something. So flipping is clearly a mechanic that they've invested in. Right. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of it.
Yeah. Yep. So we're keeping an eye on that. We're keeping an eye on Hunter Quarry. So those are two things. But yeah, totally. Let's see. So I don't know if this is Colonel WG or short for Colin Call WG. So we'll call him the Colonel. Wanted to know on Facebook is given the new two tools around objective play, both for and against objective play, do you think these new releases will reinforce objective play or provide more counters to it? And I'm going to throw this out here. I think it's almost doing both. And I think we already talked about this some, like Temporary Victory, which is this new card. It's bananas for certain warbands. It is the same as Despoilers or In the Name of the King, which are faction-specific ones, but it's a Surge, score 2 if you hold 3. It's a very, very, very powerful card for the Thorns of the Briar Queen, potentially for Sepulchral Guard, for any of the warbands that can move lots of people at once and grab lots of objectives at once. That is the big mover and shaker on that side of the equation. We've seen a lot of cards that are potentially counter to that. Like you talked about the upgrade that lets you push or place or move into something and flip that objective. A spell that lets you flip an objective, or I should say a feature token. Where do you think it stands right now, Phil?
I don't know. I feel like there's enough cards on both sides that you can now fairly effectively counter objective play, but you can also play pretty heavily into objective play, I guess, technically, with Tax Supremacy and Tactical Genius cards coming back, too. You could really just go full objective play if you wanted to. I don't think that's probably a good idea, but you certainly could. I think as long as we see tech on both sides continue, it will never be like an all out one way or the other, because people will be able to have answers for objective play. And I think this is a fairly good place for it to be. I am a little worried about like being able to have both In the Name of the King and Temporary Victory, just because it can make for some pretty swingy turns. And there's really nothing in the moment that you can do to stop some of that. The end phase scoring is a lot harder. Surge, obviously, like, I guess if you can see them setting it up, but like Thorns of the Briar Queen, it's one activation and they score it. Like, there's really no counterplay there. So I do sort of worry about those cards, but I don't know that it's going to bear out to be like a problem. I think really what we've done is we've raised objective play up to a place where it now has a seat at the table and actually interacts with the rest of the game, whereas previously, unless you were playing Thorns, you didn't care.
Yeah. I mean, we got what we were asking for, and now deal with it, right? So we wanted objective play to be on par with aggro, or many of us did. So,
mm-hmm.
Jeff, any more thoughts on that?
No. I think there's cards like Mischievous Spirits. There's objective denial flip, or sorry, feature token flip cards. And I think they've also given a lot of extra tools to aggro with these new releases, too. That is essentially a counterplay to objectives. They've given two plus move cards, and they've brought back cover ground. Yeah. So I think they're giving simultaneously. They're helping with the left and the right. So I'm pretty okay with it. I think we're in a good place.
I think so. Well, we had a handful more questions about this. I'm just going to give a nod to him. Aman was talking about how he felt about Rebound Keys, Mischievous Spirits. It's interesting with the keys. Like the focus has been on temporary victory and that sort of thing. Keys, it's hard to say. Like, is that going to be? So we mentioned Mischievous and Rebound, but what do you feel like keys have a place, or do you feel like their day has passed right now?
I think that keys definitely can still have a place, even if it's just one or maybe two, because upgrades for glory are already used in other places in the game fairly consistently. Probably the most common one is Tome of Offerings. Yes, it has the potential to be more glory, you know, for the one glory that you spend to upgrade, but really it's in most games one or two extra glory for playing that upgrade. And the keys do the same exact thing. So I do think it has a place. I think they're a little harder to use just because they only score in the third end phase. So I think they're actually very well balanced as a mechanic. And I think that they have always sort of had an appropriate place in the game. I don't think they ever really got out of hand. And so I'm fine with seeing them come back. I think it'll make for some hard choices for objective warbands.
That's fair. I think we're going to move on. We've been dwelling in this for a little bit. I just thank you, Tim and Dennis, for your questions. I think we've probably addressed those at this point. I think we're going to shift on to our 1 year. So there's been some exciting releases.
Can I cut in quick? Please, we did have one question from Julian about what the illusory fighter.
I'm not entirely sure what he's asking about, but go ahead.
I think maybe he's asking like why not illusory fighter as one of the cards to come back. Hey, I'm right there with you. I like that card. I think it has some strong play, I think it could have been another good mobility one. I think maybe the reason for not including it, if that was the question, was that a lot of the movement tech that we have now is tied to adding tokens after you do it, except for some of the in-faction teleports.
Sure.
And that was always a strength for Illusory Fighter, is that it allowed you to teleport without gaining any sort of token. And that made it very strong.
I'm really glad you brought that up. I don't think there was ever a time I drew a hand and saw an Illusory Fighter and was like, too bad I drew that card. Like, there was always something you can do with it. That was cool. So, I think it was too good for this world. We shall never see it again. this huge chunk of releases, basically coinciding with our 1 year anniversary as a podcast. That's pretty cool. We want to celebrate that a little bit. So we had a number of questions that actually apply to that. Jeff has been kind enough. He's going to take over the interrogator role for this segment. Well, he's going to have some of these answers as well. But Jeff, I want to toss it to you. So what the heck?
Yeah.
We've been on for 1 year. What do we got?
Well, first, on behalf of the community, I'd like to thank you for all the time you put in. I know all the content creators put a lot in. There's no money in this. There's just an appreciation of building the community into a game that you all love. And so on behalf of the community, I want to thank you very much for the last year of really engaging, fun episodes. And I know everybody's learned a lot from them. So thank you to start very much for that.
Yeah, for sure. It's been fun to make them, but lay it on us. Give us the tough ones.
Stop yeah. So, so first off, and now that I buttered you up, I'm going to try to take you down a few notches. So what I wanted to do was just give you kind of a three quick questions just to see how well you remember your own first year here. So I'm going to throw it to both of you. But so think of the answer. Don't say it so that the other person gets to steal your answer. But who was your first guest host? I have the answer here. Think about it. Davey, I'm going to go to you first.
Oh, no. I know Aaron doesn't count for this. I think this is wrong. I'm going to say Stephen Van and then Phil, over to you. What do you think it was? Oh, we're a mess. All right.
Yep.
What do you think?
You're going to do a lot of editing on this episode, right? I would guess that does sound right to me, but I honestly have no idea.
You guys are right. No, you remembered it, that was your first. It was about deck size and statistics. And right. Aaron was on your was your first, I guess, co-host, not so much guest.
All right.
So kudos to you there. All right. Your first catchphrase or your main catchphrase is in under 30 minutes. Yeah. How many episodes do you think you guys have done that have actually been under 30 minutes? So I'm going to throw this out. We'll start with Phil this time. How many have been under 30 minutes as promised?
It's either one or zero, I'm pretty sure.
All right. And Phil, what do you think?
I'm going hard in the paint with zero. So
One, and it was your very first episode. Oh. You had a few around the 32, 33 mark. I had to go back and double check. but yes, your very first, where you said under 30 minutes, was the only one you held your promise there. All right, and the very last question of just how was your last year? What was the topic of your first episode?
Oh, I got this.
I'm going to throw that one to Phil.
All right.
The very first episode was push ploys.
Yeah, and do you agree with that, Davey?
I agree, yeah.
All right, well, I also will concur that was your first episode. So those are your three. You guys do deserve to start a second year. You pass. so now we'll jump into some of the questions that came from some of your viewers. Matthew Martin asked, looking back at this last year, how have you enjoyed the ride so far? And how have you guys progressed as a podcast? He goes on from here a little bit, so I'll say the rest. Looking at the year ahead, what are some of your goals you have? And where would you like to be a year from now when you're talking about year number two? And then he thanks you for your awesome work.
All right. So I would say as far as the things we've progressed at, so I do the editing on here. I think I've improved on that. I think our sound quality has improved as I... It's all self-taught, you know. So I'm proud of any improvements we can make as far as that goes to make it a more enjoyable listening experience. I had the embarrassing experience of accidentally, right after I got the new, much better mic with pop filter and all that sort of thing, I accidentally recorded a couple episodes with my headphones mic. And so there's a lot of sound quality things there. Embarrassing there. But as far as enjoying it, I've loved it. There's never been a recording that went by that I wasn't excited about the topic. We're scheduling four or five out at this point. Like it's a really energizing thing. And as far as goals, I'm going to say this, I would love to see either Phil or I would love to see the podcast represent. I'd like to see one of us make the top eight cut at Adepticon or some other big event. Sort of rep for the work we're trying to put in here. Phil, what do you got?
So it's been a great year. I'd never done any sort of audio recording stuff before. For those of you who do some record or some listening for just the broader hobby, you might have known that Davey started out with our the Mortal Realms group in here, doing AOS stuff and a lot of lore background and other things. But this was sort of my first foray into podcasting and recording at all. So it's been cool learning about some of the tech and what goes into it. But honestly, I just have enjoyed getting to sit down and talk with some really great people about this game that I super love to play all the time and think about probably a little bit too much.
impossible.
And in terms of looking forward to the next year, I hope that we can continue to not miss any episodes. I think so far we've been very consistent with every other week, and I think if we can keep that going, that'd be great. And in terms for playing, I was thinking if we could represent at a tournament, that'd be great. I was actually thinking maybe represent at the Grandmasters, although yeah. I don't know that I'm gonna make it to that, but we'll see. and although it's not necessarily specific to me or Davey, continuing to build the community, whether that's through Facebook and just people who listen and send us questions like this that we're super appreciative for, or if it's in our local play group and getting more people into this game that we enjoy so much.
Wonderful. And on that topic, Jared had a question about getting more people interested in the game. And I think you guys are in a unique situation where you're kind of trying to do that every time you put out a podcast, trying to kind of develop the larger group, as in the internet community, and bring everybody together. But how would you guys recommend getting people involved locally? Do you guys do that right now?
Yeah, so we've been working at this, and this is my shout out to Phil. My schedule is such that between kids and my job, it's difficult for me to make a regular appearance on a given day of the week. And Phil has been really the pillar of our efforts as far as that goes. He's been showing up on our Thursday nights, and it's really grown the number of people who are interested in playing Warhammer Underworlds. Like it went from basically being Phil and me, plus maybe, you know, Aaron, if we could convince him to show up, to 7 or 8 people a week, which is substantial. And then we've got people in the outlying areas that we can start to bring in. But I think that comes down to Phil showing up every week. And so if somebody shows up, says, I'm interested in this game, Phil's right there to say, yeah, I'll tell you about this game. Let's play and walk them through it. I'm thankful and grateful to Phil for holding that down for us and growing our local community. I think it's the consistency is the byword for growth.
Yeah, I would agree. Consistency, like if you're working to build your own group, unfortunately it's a lot of work at the start, and you're probably going to be putting in a lot more than you're getting out, at least for the first little bit. But that's sort of the thing. You have to be consistent. You have to make sure that you press to get word out. However, you have to do that, whether that's through Facebook groups in your local area or if that's just through word of mouth in your local store. It's just about finding a way to reach people and getting them to enjoy playing the game. And after that, it sort of does itself because people want to come back. And I will definitely say that we had a lot of help from our local GW store manager. Vint has been super great about supporting us in trying to build this community, and making sure to mention it to people who come into the store on random days when we would never know that there was somebody looking at Underworlds. And he's always making sure to help promote that we're, you know, have this local community going. So if you play at your local game store, or if you play at your GW store, or whatever it happens to be, whoever, you know, the proprietor is, they probably want people in there more often too. So, you know, enlist help, get more people to help let people know that this is a thing that's going on and that they should feel free to stop in and join up whenever they are interested.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I could just echo some of those sentiments, we at my local store, we ended up setting up a Facebook Messenger chat group, and we got the owner of the store also into that group. And anytime somebody comes in, he just adds them to the chat, and we call it a looking for group, Underworld's looking for group. And people are chatting there all day long about what they're thinking for decks, what they're looking forward to. Does anybody want to play a game? And sometimes that's a nice way to kind of bring a community. It doesn't even need to be local. It can be larger. It can be for your state or your province, just to get people chatting on a kind of semi-daily basis. Just showing up once a week maybe isn't the full experience that is Underworlds. I'm fully engrossed in it. I chat all the day with friends about, you know, are you playing tonight? Are you playing this week? How'd your game go? And you can really easily do that in a Facebook Messenger chat. And it's, you don't need to be friends with everybody on Facebook, but the nice part is that the store owners can just add people in at will. And so I think that's really good for the community. So if anybody's looking for other tips, I'd recommend that.
Absolutely.
Going to a hard-hitting question here. Chris Spark asked, does Phil have a girlfriend other than Vortimus? I think that's something we've all been wondering.
The burning questions that all the listeners must know.
Yeah.
Well, at the moment, Korn is really the one who's calling me, much more so than Zeench. So I will say that I'm a
hussy.
I'm a man of multiple masters at the moment.
Well, there you go. Steven Van came in with a great question, just asking just about mechanics, you know, for season 3, 4 and beyond. Is there any creative space essentially that you guys still see that maybe hasn't been filled? You guys talk a lot about the mechanics that you see kind of right now. What do you guys see or hope for going forward?
So I would, we've already talked about it a little bit. I would love to see them. I hope where they're heading with this is to fill out the flip or objective like removal mechanic. I think they've signaled that they may be there. And the hunter quarry thing, I think that has room to expand as well. Those are the obvious ones. As far as the less obvious, I'd like to see them looking at different things as a resource. So spending a card in your hand or removing a card in your discard pile from the game or plunging into your discard pile. Like they've touched on that with some spells previously. I think there's more room to explore that. And so I think those are the areas I'd like to see. What about you, Phil?
Yeah. Just to touch on like the idea of spent glory versus just glory is something that is new to the game. And I think that extra layer of how to quantify scoring in the game is actually really interesting, and it's something I hadn't really ever thought to try putting in the game, but it adds a nice balance, and so I could see more things like that. And I guess we kind of already have something like that where there's a new upgrade, I can't remember the name of it, it's a pendant where you actually lose glory to gain damage. And so, you know, you can play around with more of these already familiar mechanics rather than like completely new things. And it's like, let's just pull one more lever in this area and suddenly it changes the feel of a mechanic that we feel like we already know. So I like stuff like that. I'd like to see more things like that. But then also things that we've talked about before on the show where like have an upgrade to make another fighter a wizard, like. That would go so far towards making spells and magic feel like it was a bigger part of the game. I would just love to see some way of making magic more prevalent, just because right now it pretty much is relegated to a few warbands and you don't really see it anywhere else. And then something I've always thought would be interesting is so the inspire mechanics are always in one direction, right? You do a thing, you get inspired, you get better.
My man.
Very cool.
But if you could have it start the other way, where your fighters start better and then get worse over the course of the game, I think that would be really sort of a curious way to turn the game on its head a little bit.
Yeah, buddy. All right.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Yeah, I think a lot of people, when they first saw the card art and saw the goblins running, there was a question about whether they start mounted And once they get lose a certain amount of wounds or something happens, now there's another model for Inspire. Anyway, there was a lot of talk about that, but that's a really cool mechanic. Very good point. Moving on to the next question we got here from Rob Howard. He was asking, including what you've seen in Beastgrave so far, what is your favorite season so far? So you got one, two, or three?
My cop out is whatever season I'm currently playing. Like I've enjoyed this game from start to finish for different reasons all along the way. And so if you ask me right this minute, I'd say right now. But if you ask me any time in the past, I'd have said right then. It's been great all the way through. And cop out, sorry, Rob, but I'm loving this game. Phil?
Essentially the same answer, but I guess if I had to say, like, so I guess to preface this, I'd say if we were to maybe be answering this at the end of season three and I had to like make the distinction, I think right now, if we were to say, okay, if season three ended today and we just had to make a decision about what seasons in those categories are our favorite, I think what season two did for the game is something that I think is basically why the game is what it is now. And so I really loved seeing how much they could realize that this game is going to be a thing and that they want to invest so many resources in it and really sort of open the doors to allow for the game to end up now into Beastgrave, where we're, you know, every single thing that comes out, I've been loving. I will say that I only don't say Beastgrave right now because with that criteria of like wanting to say, here's these individual like pockets of what this thing is. The tail end of Shadespire was a little disappointing. I will say that it, and I don't think it'll happen again, but the meta got really stale and there was a really long period of time where we didn't see anything really change. I hope that we never get into a situation where things stagnate like that again. And I hope we don't have sort of some of the mechanical missteps that we ended up seeing, like once people really sort of turned on to relics at the end of season one. So I think there's always that inherent risk. And so I maybe don't want to just say Beastgrave is my favorite, even though it is currently. Because there could be something down the line that would, you know, ruin Beastgrave, but I really doubt that they would make that misstep at this point.
Yeah, they definitely seem like they have a good good handle on things. I got another hard-hitting question here. This one's from Max Bernstein. He's phrased this question as an or, so maybe you have an option of answering one or the other. He says, how come I haven't been on your show yet? Or how come I can't beat you at this game? So, Phil, why don't we go to you first here? So I think you have the option of answering one or the other. Maybe.
Well, maybe, Max. Maybe the reason you haven't been on the show yet is because you haven't beat us yet.
Gatekeeper.
No. Honestly, I think it's really just a scheduling thing. If you want to be on the show, man, pitch us an idea for a show that you think you'd be a great co-host for, and we'll make it happen.
Yeah, I assume that why can't I beat you is angled towards Phil, and it's because you haven't played him, man. Just play him, you know? See what happens. So
very nice. Well, we're gonna go to the legend himself, Michael Carlin, for this next question. He says, what is and has been your favorite warband to play with over the entire length of the game? So tough
question of the day.
Yeah, and this is over the entire course, not just right now, the entire course. And I'm gonna go to you, Davey, to start.
Dang. I'm going to go with Reavers. I like Reavers because it is such a savage warband. I love how aggressive they are. I love that you can, like, go flying in and you don't, like, the results. So if I charge Arnold and he rolls that crit and does 2 damage and throws you into a lethal and kills you, and even though he had 3 wounds, like, that's awesome. If he doesn't do that and he gets killed, I get closer to Inspire. I think they embody the spirit of Warhammer Underworlds. And I know there's all kinds of different ways to play it. I think time and time again, I keep coming back to the Reavers. So Reavers, OGs, that's my vote. Phil, how about you?
Reavers were sort of my first love with this game. I played the hell out of the Reavers for all of season one. But I think now that we have so many, it's so hard to say. I guess still Reavers, although I really just love playing things that make my opponent just absolutely hate playing against it. If that's a fair way to phrase that. So I was playing a Suicide Reavers deck. At one of the tournaments that we went to. And it was doing some really weird stuff where I was intentionally killing my own fighters and
love it.
Stuff yeah. that just left my opponent with like scratching his head, and I was scoring so much glory in ways that he just never saw coming. And we were, I think, tied 1-1.
Yeah,
and we were the day was sort of running on, and it was sort of the question of, okay, you want to do the tiebreaker? And he basically just said, no, I don't want to play that again.
Shout out to Kenny. We love you. Appreciate you being our opponent, but
So, stuff like that, I find fun. So,
well, that's great. That's great. I'm good. Two last questions here. They're fairly quick. This one's from Rachel. She asks, what is the best game you've ever played? Phil, that might have been yours you just mentioned there. But if you can remember back, what was the most epic game that you can have a memory of? I'll start with you, Davey.
So I'm going to give two answers for this. I remember saying after playing this game that might have been the best game I've ever played. It was My Reavers versus Phil's Eyes. And we had so much power card interplay, and we knew each other's decks well enough where I was thinking, like, here's what he might be about to try to score or play, and he was doing the same thing to me. And so there was such a back and forth, and I think the game got decided by, like, a glory or two. But it was, like, dice rolls were in the – like, every single play and dice roll was crucial. And this was, unfortunately – Phil, you probably remember this if I give you this a pointer, it's the one where I forgot to bring my figures.
Oh, that game, yeah.
so I was using like all these weird proxies for my Reavers. So that is my casual game of choice, and then my actual competition game of choice was at the ATC. I played Josh. It was our In the first game we played. I kind of ran away with it with my Molags. Tomes Molag, and he cleverly figured out he was going to lose it, and so then just stopped playing. So I didn't know anything else about his deck. Like he knew he was going to lose, so he concealed information. And in the second game, he knew exactly what he needed to do, and he had me on the back foot the entire game, and I got lucky on top of like playing as well as I possibly could to take that game, and so. In competition, that is the favorite competition game I've ever played. So,
very nice.
Yeah,
Phil.
There's a lot. Although one that I liked just because of the sort of headspace that it required was one where Davey and I were playing for glass. It was the final round of a local tournament. And he was playing defensive Steelhearts, and I was playing defensive Molags.
Yeah.
And that whole game basically revolved around one or two activations, and the rest of it was us being cagey and sort of standing around trying to figure out when to make the move on our opponent.
Yeah.
And it was such a chess match that. And obviously, we'd played against each other enough to know like what all the possible scenarios were. So, it was a really fun sort of mind game of trying to figure out when to make those moves. And it ultimately came down to like one or two dice rolls that if it had gone one way or the other, it would have decided that game differently. So, always love those close ones.
Good choice.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I'll jump in on this one just because, you know, your favorite game is always something that I think everybody has in mind. Mine was in the second last round, or I guess the last round before the cut at Adepticon last year. I had been playing Skaven the entire day. And unfortunately, I just because I was winning games, but being at the very bottom of the win bracket, it always played, you know, perfect 1x versus the top. So I kept on having to play the best player, and it was always a Molog. I had to play a Molog player, a Cursebreaker. And then I got to the final round before the cut, and it was Kyle Dalton. This guy is an incredible painter, and he had just been running through people all day. And we sat down across from each other, and I knew that this was going to be the time that the Molog got me. And we played three games, and they were the closest games. He would hidden path. I would then hidden path. It was just this back and forth. And I managed to pull it out in the third game. He missed something. I got a hit. And it was, we hugged each other after the game. It was so intense because both thought we had a chance because we were both perfect. We both thought we had a chance to make it into that last cut for the trophy. And kudos to Amon and Dean for making that final cut. But geez, the two of us, we felt like we really battled hard for that that last game. So anyway, that game will always stand out for me with Kyle Dalton. So going on to the last question here, and I've saved one that I think everybody's been wondering is, this is from Tony Fields. Do you get a cut of the album royalties from the tracks that you recommend at the end? Do you get a cut of the royalties,
no,
Dean?
No.
Davey.
Actually, the reverse, because if somebody's been listening from the very start, we used to play a clip, and then I figured out what I understood to be fair use did not apply to what we were doing. So that's why if you go back and listen, we have no audio. I do love music, and that's why I continue to do it. And actually, I'm glad you brought it up because in celebration of this 1 year, I'm going to create a Spotify playlist, and that'll be in the link. So if you're one of the one or two people who are interested in the songs that I recommend at the end of every episode, you can check them all out in the Spotify playlist and just give it a click.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I do want to thank Bill and Brandon Huss for their questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to them. But thank you very much, Davey and Phil, for going through this lightning round of near 21 questions.
Sure. Yeah.
Definitely.
And thank you for guessing, Jeff. I really appreciate you coming in for the second time and really nailing it. So.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
Sure. Hey, so this is a good time to announce this contest. I mentioned it at the start of the episode. The contest here is take the first two seasons of Warhammer Underworlds. Think about it. Think about it for just a little second. Think about all the cards that got released. And we're talking season one. We're talking season two. We're talking the Leaders expansion and the Power Unbound. Now think about which Underworlds fighter was pictured most frequently in the art of those two seasons, including those expansions. And our contest is, name the fighter that has been most represented. If you give us an entry, if you give us a guess, you're going to get one entry. If you guess correctly, we'll give you a bonus entry. And the winner of that, we're going to ship out to you a Underworlds expansion of your choice. And so that can be a warband. It can be anything up to, but not actually a starter set. So we'll do anything short of a starter set. If you want it, we'll send it to you. And I'm going to give you guys the first. You're immediately disqualified. Actually, Jeff, you're qualified. You don't know any better. Phil, I'll let you guess, but you can't win it because you're right here. Phil, I'm going to edit this out. But what's your guess?
You know, I feel like it's maybe one of the Reavers. I feel like they show up all over the place. And I want to say...
Oof, I will tell you this. I also guessed a Reaver, and I was also wrong.
Cool. Good to know.
I guessed... but he is not the correct answer. And over to you, Jeff. You got a guess?
I do. I love that you have these stats, though. I think that's a good use of a day right there.
Oh, yeah. And it was like most of a day, so that's super cool.
Well, that makes the prize even better. I'm going to assume that my deduction is that it's probably season one because they had the most cards of any release. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to go with one of the originals and say that it was. So that's going to be my guess. I will submit it to you in the format that you ask for, which is, I'm assuming, at your Gmail account, which you'll be there shortly.
You can tweet it at us. You can send it to me on Facebook, or you can send it to our Gmail, and we'll cover that in a second. So just for reference, it's kind of tough to figure out some of these fighters that you see, like a Fire Slayer's foot, and you don't know who it is. So it's mostly for fun. Don't get too bent out of shape, and we'll go from there. Last thing I want to say is that we actually do have our podcast network has a Patreon. Link in the show notes. Basically, you can think of it as a tip jar. We haven't mentioned it before now. It's just there if you appreciate what we're doing. You can drop us a line, drop us a little change in there. No big deal. And that is tied in with the Dogs of Warcry and with the Mortal Realms that we're also doing. So if you like that, cool. Let us know. Otherwise, we're just happy to have you as a listener. So thank you for doing that. And we're excited for the year to come. We're on to the outro. Does anybody have any last comments before we outro here?
If you're shooting to me here, I think it would just be to encourage everybody to get out there, keep building a community. This is a fantastic game. It just gets better every single release and every year. But it does take a group of individuals to push out and try to include more and more people. Seeing what they're doing in all these different areas, the Crit Def guys talking to them about the efforts they're putting in. It does take a village to no. There's a saying about a village, building a village, but
something, I think something village,
something village, and there's people involved. So yeah, get out there. It's tournament season right now. I know that around my area, at least, there's a tournament every 2 or 3 weeks, and we're definitely encouraging everybody to get out, whether it's your first time or not. So that would be the only thing I would say is just keep encouraging your local metas.
I could not have said it better. Jeff, on behalf of me and Phil, I'd really love to thank you for being on this episode. It's been awesome to have you on here. It's been great to celebrate the 1 year with you, and we're looking forward to more. Phil, you got anything before we outro here?
I think we're good.
Let's do it. All right. So if you want to get in touch with us, that's Twitter at WTHcast or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. Make sure you send in your submissions, who you think the most pictured fighter in season one and season two cards was. We want to say thanks to everybody who put in a question. If we didn't get to yours, I apologize. This is, I can already see it, I think we are the longest episode we've ever released. So there you go.
Fitting.
What's that?
Fitting.
Yeah, exactly. If you're recommended listening for this episode, we're going to go with This Year by Mountain Goats. I was kind of saving the Mountain Goats for when we did a deep dive on the Despoilers, but we can always do a different track for them. Thank you for What the Hex. I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
And this is Jeff.
And Derek, having heard your interview on Battle for Salvation, this one's for you. There we go. Fair. There is going to be much editing to make me sound better in just a second.